I'm Joe Bianca.
I'm Bill Stanley.
I'm Jonathan Green.
They say the harder the work, the greater the reward. This is our life's work.
Good morning. It is 10:30, Wednesday, April 28th. This is the TDN Writers Room, presented by Keeneland. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News. I'm just really bored by all these Derby horses, especially that one coming out of post 12.
Hi, I'm Bill Finley. I'm a correspondent with Thoroughbred Daily News. And yes, I got a John Green t-shirt as well. On Sunday, it's going to be available on eBay. If he wins the Derby, $79.99. If he loses the Derby, three for a dollar.
Jonathan Green, general manager for DJ Stable. And I want to thank everyone for their tweets and emails and texts. We're also very excited about running a horse in the Never Win Two lifetime for 6250 down at Gulfstream.
Those are the big Saturday races we all strive for.
For a long time, those were the Saturday races for DJ Stable. Absolutely.
Well, now look at you. John and Len will be
merch. We got merch and everything.
Merch. Maybe we can get you to sign a program once you're famous. So best of luck to John and Len and the whole gang. And we'll talk more about it as the show goes on. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. The flexibility to buy and sell year-round, the convenience of an intuitive digital platform, the opportunity to reach a global audience and never leave the farm. No matter your strategy, Keeneland's digital sales ring provides an advantage that's yours for the taking. Backed by the most trusted name in thoroughbred sales, find your digital advantage at the Keeneland May Digital Sale. Entries close May 18th. Visit KeenelandDigital.com for details. So we have reached Kentucky Derby week. Kentucky Derby 147 is this Saturday. We'll break it all down as well as some of the undercard stakes. But first, here's a rundown of the field, numbers 1 through 20. Number 1 is Nova Agenda. The 6th Florida Derby winner for Todd Pletcher looks to become his 3rd Kentucky Derby winner. No one has won the Derby from the rail draw since Ferdinand in 1986. Number 2 is Like the King, winner of the Jeff Ruby Stakes over a synthetic track at Turfway. He's the only horse in the field without a win over dirt. Number 3 is Brooklyn Strong, the blue collar story. Bought for just $5,000 at OBS April, he'll be ridden by Umberto Rispoli, who was taken off of Santa Anita Derby winner Rock Your World. Number 4 is Keep Me in Mind, 3rd behind Essential Quality at 30-1 in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and 2nd behind him at 52-1 in the Breeders' Futurity. He's been unable to factor in 2 starts as a 3-year-old. Number 5 is Sainthood, aggressively placed by Todd Pletcher off of a troubled trip 2nd in the Jeff Ruby Stakes. Number 6 is Obesos, who's produced a new buyer top in all 5 career starts and was a fast closing 3rd at 28-1 in the Louisiana Derby. Number 7 is Mandaloon, a dull 6th in the Louisiana Derby. His Risen Star win got a 98 buyer, which is 5th highest in the field. This will be the first time in 6 starts that he doesn't go favored. Number 8 is Medina Spirit, yet to be worse than 2nd in 5 starts, 4 of which came in graded stakes, and will be piloted by last year's Derby winner, John Velasquez. Number 9 is Hot Rod Charlie, who looks to give Doug O'Neill his 3rd Derby win. 2nd at 94-1 to Essential Quality in the Juvenile, he got a 99 buyer for his Louisiana Derby win. Number 10 is Midnight Bourbon, one of 2 for Steve Asmussen, who's still seeking his first Derby win after 21 starters. Midnight Bourbon is a half-brother to Grade 1 winner Gervin, who was 13th in the 2017 Derby. Number 11 is Dynamic One, who took 4 tries to break his maiden, but stepped right into stakes company and was a tough luck 2nd in the Wood Memorial. Number 12 is Helium, undefeated in 3 starts and comes in off an 8-week layoff. His 84 buyer in the Tampa Bay Derby belies a huge effort in which he moved early, was wide around both turns, and battled back to win after being passed in the stretch. Number 13 is Hidden Stash. 2nd in that Tampa Bay Derby, he also covered a lot of ground, but was the well-beaten 4th in the Bluegrass. Number 14 is Essential Quality, a deserving favorite, being an undefeated champion, but is no faster on buyer figures than the other contenders. No one has won the Derby from the 14-hole since Carryback in 1961. Godolphin's best chance yet to win its elusive Derby. Number 15 is Rock Your World, also undefeated after running away to a Santa Anita Derby win in his first dirt start. He picks up Joel Rosario, the hottest rider in the country, who won the Derby on Orb in 2013. Number 16 is King Fury, the most expensive horse in the race, selling for $950,000 as a yearling. He's the only horse with multiple wins over the Churchill track. Number 17 is Highly Motivated, who looks to give Chad Brown his first Derby win, breaking from Post 17, which is yet to produce a winner and has only 3 in-the-money finishes and 42 Derby starts. Number 18 is Superstock, co-owned by Steve Asmussen's father, Keith. He was 3rd to the favorite in the Breeders' Futurity and won the Arkansas Derby last out. Number 19 is Soup and Sandwich, one of 2 horses from Mark Cassie, who's also looking for his first Derby. And number 20 is Bourbonic, who upset the wood at 72-1 and is the first Derby mount for Kendrick Carmouche, who is the first black jockey to ride in the Derby since 2013. So this is obviously not the Derby field that we expected earlier in the year. I saw a really interesting stat that both from Pool 1, the Kentucky Derby future Pool 1, and Pool 4, which is the last pool, only 7 horses made it to the Derby. That's incredible. 7 horses from Pool 1, 7 horses from Pool 4 total, not 14 together. 7 horses from Pool 4 made it to the Derby. And we saw that a little bit last week. We didn't talk about it because we were on scene at OBS. But, you know, there were a couple horses dropping off and a couple horses that you didn't think were going to get in that were down around 26 or 27 are going to get into the field. Overall, it's a very, very competitive race. Obviously, Life Is Good falling off the Derby trail was the biggest factor in that. He was going to be a heavy, heavy favorite. But now Essential Quality, I think, might take over that mantle. And especially with news yesterday that or 2 days ago that Mattress Mack is going to be placing a big old Derby bet on Essential Quality. So I think that that might give people value otherwise that they wouldn't have otherwise had. Mattress Mack is doing this as he usually does as a hedge for his promotion and his furniture store, where people get money back for their mattresses if Essential Quality wins. So he's hedging there. But, you know, in terms of the actual field, if you look at the buyer figures, Essential Quality does not stand out whatsoever. If you look at the sheet numbers, he's a little bit better and I think more of a deserving favorite. But I don't know, on the buyer scale, he's run 5 times, obviously won all 5 times. His top is a 97. And there are several horses in here who have run 98s and 99s. Rock Your World ran a 100 in the standing at Derby's, the only horse with a triple digit buyer in the field. I guess it depends on, you know, how much you trust his form in terms of finding a way to get it done every single race. He hasn't run this blowout monster race that really makes you afraid, but he has been able to get it done. And as I've said before, his versatility is his biggest asset. Drew well, the 14 hole, even though, you know, the Post hasn't won the Derby since 1961. I think most people would agree that that's a good draw. You want a few more horses to your inside than outside. It's a long run to the first turn. He's got good tactical speed. I'm not trying to beat him, but, you know, I also think that he's going to be a little bit vulnerable at a short price. In terms of horses to bet against him, I do like Helium. I got to say, I'm not just sucking up to John here. I've moved past the point where I need to suck up to John. Helium, I think he's 50-1 in the morning line. I don't think he's going to be quite that high. But if you look at his sheet numbers, you know, Essential Quality ran like a half or a negative half in a couple of his last races. Everybody else is in between like a 2 and a 3 on their top race. And Helium ran a 3 in the Tampa Bay Derby. So he's right there. Dynamic One is another one that I think makes a lot of sense. He's kind of the now horse, I think. He took 4 tries to break his maiden, but then he ran that big race in the Wood Memorial. He came back with a super, super work at Churchill for a horse who doesn't usually work that fast. Hot Rod Charlie and Mandaloon and Obesos, I think, can all factor. I think we talked about this a little bit. The Louisiana horses are probably the strongest as a whole of any of the prep locations. So those are the 3 that I would be interested in at a little bit of prices. Hot Rod Charlie, probably not going to be a price. Known Agenda is a total toss out for me. You know, we're going to talk to Randy Moss in a little bit. But he thinks that post positions are a little overrated. But that one hole, man, you have to gun from that rail draw. Otherwise, you're going to get shuffled back. You're going to get checked going into that cavalry charge into the first turn. That's the only post that to me is kind of a throw out. 1 and 2. Because it's just you have to be race ridden early on. You can't really just settle like you can if you have a post that's further outside. So those are my initial thoughts. We'll circle back to Man with a couple more, but let's toss it to Bill and John and see what their impressions are.
Yeah, Joe, I mean, looking at the same sort of the race as an overview, in the last, 6, 7, 8 years, the Derby has turned into a very formidable race. I mean, Country House is a big price, but he doesn't really count because he got put up. the favorites have won a lot, and you're not getting any wacky outcomes like Mind That Bird. But I got a feeling this is going to be a wacky Kentucky Derby in the sense that, I mean, I see the same things that you see. Can Essential Quality win? Of course he can. But, you know, he's the favorite and he's vulnerable because, as you said, he has not shown that he's a superior talent to everybody else in the field. And also, I too looked at the Thoroughgraph sheets, and there are about half a dozen horses that are going to be in that 30-40-1 neighborhood, Helium among them, that are fast enough to be competitive with this field. So from a gambling aspect, I think I would look at it just trying to beat Essential Quality, throwing some other horses in top, and then, you know, try to, you know, I'm not saying what happened, but could this be one of those races where the superfecta is going to pay $79,000 when Obisos finishes second and Helium is third and something like that? It's all possible. We're going to talk later with Randy Moss, and I did ask him this question about what he thinks of this crop overall, and you can wait for his answer. It's coming up. But I think this is not a good group. And I'm not one of those guys. Some people say that every single year, this crop stinks, this crop stinks, this crop stinks. I don't. But if you just, you know, we all are so into the numbers now. If you look at the numbers of these horses, and as you mentioned, Rocky World's the only one with a triple-digit buyer, they're really not all that fast, these horses. So, you know, it should be a good race. The Godolphin Angle is a good story, them trying to finally win the Kentucky Derby. But I was sort of thinking that it's going to be, when they cross the wire on Saturday, we're all going to be scratching our heads saying, how did he win?
Yeah, and Bill, just to piggyback on what you were saying, you know, it really has been a chalky Derby the past couple of years. You have, you know, Authentic and Tis the Law finished 1-2 last year. Justify, you know, won in 18 is the favorite. Always Dreaming, you know, in 17 was 5-1. Nyquist was a 2-1 favorite in 16. American Pharoah was 2-1 favorite. California Chrome 2-1 favorite. So, you know, it has come up recently as a very chalk centric kind of race. This year, though, I think that you can make a case for a number of horses. I think that even though Essential Quality is the champion two-year-old and is undefeated, it may have taken some of the starch out of him, you know, last time out when he ran in the Bluegrass. He had to really fight and dig to win. The connections say that was a good thing because it showed that he had some grit and you know, and it wasn't easy for him. Other people look at it and say, you know, is he setting up for a bounce because of that? Because he really did have to have a huge effort in order to win that kind of a race. When I personally look at a race like this, where there's 19, 20 horses in it, I circle back and look at horses that I don't think are going to win. And there's, you know, 6 or 7 horses in this race where it would take a lot for them to win, ranging from horses that are trying to improve on the dirt versus, you know, on the poly before, horses that have run a number of times, almost danced every dance, you know, like a Hidden Stash where, you know, he's run 7 times and really every prep he's had to run hard to hit the board. So, you know, is that too many? Is the juice out of the, you know, out of the lemon on that front? Then you also have horses that you have a question mark next to him. Mandaloon is probably the biggest question mark horse in this race because he looked like he was going to be one of the favorites going to the Derby, and he just put in such a lackluster race in the Louisiana Derby. Do you say, okay, he peaked and that's it for him? Or do you just cross a line through it? And if you cross a line through that race, you know, I think he could be, you know, very easily one of the top 2 or 3 horses in this race. So I look at a race like this and cross off horses and then work backwards and say, okay, of the remaining dozen or so, which ones are, you know, are really peaking for this kind of a race? And I agree with both of your sentiments, and that's why we're running in this race, because we're not scared of the favorite. Would I be surprised if Essential Quality wins? No. He is, you know, undefeated in the 2-year-old champ until proven otherwise. He's the horse to beat. But it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, a 20-1 shot, 30-1 shot ended up winning this race, and then you look back on it and say, oh, yeah, that makes sense because fill in the blank was peaking. Fill in the blank, you know, had an excuse last time out. Fill in the blank, you know, got a better post this time and was able to sit off the pace, or was actually the only speed in the race and nobody could catch him. So I think we're going to be looking at this race at 7:15 on Saturday night and kind of going, yeah, that makes sense, rather than where the hell did this horse come in from?
John will be drunk off of Pure Leaf iced teas by that point, so we're not going to get any coherent thoughts from him. But no, I mean, I agree with your point that I don't know. There aren't like a ton of tosses. I'll give you my tosses so that you can throw it back in my face when one of these horses wins. Tossing like the King, Tossing Keep Me in Mind, Tossing Sainthood. I mean, that's there really aren't that many beyond that. Hidden Stash, I guess I can toss. Soup and Sandwich, Bourbonic. Like, that's only five or six horses that, like, I don't see as win contenders. You know, I think that leaves 14 or 15 horses that I could conceivably make a case for. That's usually the kind of race that I stay away from and don't bet, because when it's, you know, when you have that many conceivable outcomes, it's kind of just like, you know, pulling a slot lever or playing lottery. The interesting thing is the pace as well. Is, you know, the scratch of Cattle River's defection was a big deal in terms of the pace. I thought he was going to inject a lot of speed into the race. Now I look at three different horses that I think might be able to go to the front. Obviously, Rock Your World is going to be aggressively handled, because he went wire to wire in the Santa Anita Derby. He went fast early in that race and kept going, so he's proven that. Soup and Sandwich, who was up on the pace in the Florida Derby from an outside draw, you got to think Tyler Gaffney is going to be aggressive on him. And Medina Spirit, who has run some fast fractions in his career, I think has to go from inside of the other two speeds. Other than that, like, I don't see anyone that's really hell-bent on the lead. And I think that there's going to be a moderate pace. We're going to talk a little bit about the Oaks in a few, where the Oaks looks like it has no speed whatsoever, at least to me. But, you know, that leads to an interesting scenario where there's a lot of tactical decisions to be made going into that first turn. Unless somebody just runs off, I think, you know, a lot of guys are going to have to maybe use a little bit more speed from their horses than they normally would, including Helium, because he's not slow. He's been up on the pace before, going 7 furlongs. So I think, you know, Julian might want to be a little bit aggressive there. Don't know what your guys' plans are. But any thoughts on how you guys see the race shaping up? Do you agree that this might be a bit of a slower pace, or do you think that someone's going to take the bull by the horns here?
I think it's going to be the former, Joe, because, you know, there are horses that have tactical speed, but having tactical speed versus, you know, have to have the lead types is a very different thing. So, you know, and Rock Your World is probably a good guess to see who's going to go to the lead. But I can't see them going, you know, 45 to the half. There's just no horse in this race that wants to do that. Now, the only way that will change would be if, you know, three riders all have the same idea. There's not much speed in here. I'm going to go for the lead. And they all get up and battle into a pace thing. So I don't think the winner necessarily has to be a front runner. But if you like somebody and you know they're going to be 16th, 17th early, I would be a little wary of that horse, especially maybe you want to put them in third or fourth in the tries and supers or something like that. But I would definitely be a little hesitant to, you know, make a pick of that nature. But it's one of the riddles that makes this race interesting. I mean, usually in the Kentucky Derby, we absolutely know who's going to go to the lead and, you know, if it's going to be a fast pace or a slow pace. I can't recall too many derbies like this where, you know, nobody really knows. It's really, you know, I wish I could bet this race a half mile into it. On Betfair, you could, but that would make it a lot easier to play.
Right.
And you would also think that on the outside, you know, Soup and Sandwich has to go, has to send, has to be close to the lead. And I think you can make a case also the Highly Motivated is also going to be on or close to the lead, you know, from the 17 post as well. That being said, and I'm going to shift gears on you guys for a minute, that it's something we don't usually talk about that often, but that's a horse's temperament. And when you get through some of these races, you know, that especially in this day and age of COVID, where there aren't fans or aren't that many fans, horses' mentalities, you know, aren't really a big part of the equation. But in watching some of the coverage for this week of horses being, you know, schooled in the paddock and how they're doing in the morning, there are a couple of horses here that I would be concerned about if I was a handicapper, especially when there's going to be fans coming in and also they get a sense of like the pressure that the people are, you know, facilitating, you know, and the nervousness that they have. Midnight Bourbon, who is a horse that I really like and has some good numbers and is breezing very well at Churchill, gets really hot in the paddock and acts up in the paddock. And that would be a concern of mine asking a horse to go a mile and a quarter, is are they expending additional energies, you know, pre-race? And that's a horse that, you know, that certainly has good numbers. And I certainly wouldn't bet against normally the Mike Smith, Steve Asmussen, you know, combination. But that's a horse that I would would be concerned about. If I saw him getting washy in the paddock, I would, you know, knock him down a couple of pegs in my mind. And then Soup and Sandwich also, you know, where, again, this is a Cassie trained horse, and Mark obviously trains horses for us. So I'm not giving away any inside information that the general public has, but that's a horse that last race was like trying to mount the pony. I mean, he was all over the place physically, and acting like a tappet. And, you know, tappets in general, usually, you know, have that quick turn of foot and energetic and are high twitch kind of horses. He's out of a tappet mare, and he is showing a lot of those same mental attributes as well, about being a little high strung and not having his mind on business. So again, if you're looking, I think in this kind of a race, you're splitting hairs to kind of get rid of horses out of your exacta or trifecta box. Those would be two horses that I'd be watching in the post parade. And if they were acting up or they were expending a lot more energy than the other horses, you know, were, I would be concerned. Would I cross them off altogether? I don't know. But in the hierarchy of things, maybe I wouldn't put them in my, you know, three horse exacta box or my five horse trifecta box if they were getting washy and expending energy, because so many of these horses are like a flat foot tie right now that you're looking for any little thing that would be, you know, throw them off their game, whether it's, you know, being in the one hole for known agenda or physically just, you know, throwing off too much energy in the pre-race and not having enough gas in the tank, you know, coming to the top of the stretch.
Yeah. I mean, and it's going to be great to have fans back. We saw a smattering of fans out there yesterday for the beginning of Derby week. So that's huge. And it really does feel like back to normal for Saturday in May. Fans in the stands. You know, obviously, it's not going to be full capacity, but we're thankful to see that. I agree with John that, you know, the field is so evenly matched that I think the walkover to the first turn run is going to make or break a lot of horses in this race. Whether or not they keep their stuff together, walking over and in the paddock, being saddled, and then whether or not they can avoid trouble going into the first turn, they can break well. I think that, you know, like Bill said, if we can bet the race a quarter mile or a half mile into it, I'd have a much better idea than I currently do. But that's what makes the Derby so interesting and so fascinating and such a puzzle, is that, you know, especially with a field like this, where you don't necessarily have a chunk of clear top contenders above everybody else, is that there are so many variables, and, you know, it keeps the suspense up all the way through, that, you know, there's no procession of like an expected favorite that, you know, is either going to win or run second. I thought last year, you know, it was kind of an anticlimactic Derby, honestly, with Tizzalaw and Authentic. It was a decent little stretch battle, but it felt like, you know, there were very few top contenders in that race. And two of them actually were the only ones that really ran in that race. So, this year it's going to be more of a scramble, which is good for, you know, betting the race, and it's good for TV. It's more interesting to have more possible winners, and that's what we've got this year. So with that, we'll give our top three picks each for the Derby. Now, these are not legally binding. I'm not obligated to bet these horses. If one of them wins, don't automatically assume that I made money on it, because I know how to, you know, finagle my way out of wins betting the Derby. But so for the top three, I'm going to go Obesos number one. I know that's a little bit of a long shot. I'm hoping that he shows a little bit more speed, because I don't think the race, the pace is going to be that fast, but I just think he's going to have good value. And I like those Louisiana horses. Number two, I'm going to go Dynamic One. Like I said, I think he's the now horse. You know, I think, again, he's going to be a really good price, and I think he's got a lot more potential to find, I think, than most of these horses. And number three, I got to go Helium. And again, it's not just because John's here. I do think that he's going to provide good value, especially if you're a Sheets player. Hopefully he can work out a decent trip. So I'm going all three long shots. 1, 2, 3, Obesos, Dynamic One, and Helium. Bill?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Highly Motivated on top. And, you know, I've always been an Essential Quality fan, so why am I not picking him after he beat Highly Motivated in the Bluegrass? Because he only beat him by a neck, and you're going to get a much better price on Highly Motivated. And, you know, the winner of this race is going to run the best race of their lives. They're going to improve 5-6 lengths over anything they've ever done before. They almost have to. And here's a horse trained by Chad Brown but I think has not reached its peak yet. And these horses are so lightly raced this year that you could probably say that about a lot of them. So, and also he's got tactical speed, which I think is going to help. So then I would put Essential Quality second, because I think the Bluegrass is going to be the key race. And then I'm with you, Joe. I like that dynamic one a little bit as well for Todd Pletcher. He's the one that I'm going to throw in my ticket at 25-1 or so.
Very nice. Very nice. I'm going to go a little bit different than what you guys are. Again, we've been talking about there's 20 horses in here and there's probably a dozen horses you can choose from. And I would go with Hot Rod Charlie. And Hot Rod Charlie just has been impressive all throughout his career. He surprised everyone by running, you know, second in the Breeders' Cup at 99-1, basically. He came back and ran a hard fought, you know, race in the Lewis out in Santa Anita. Then they shipped him to the fairgrounds and he ran a really good race, you know, in the fairgrounds, albeit with a different trainer. But now he's back in the barn of Doug O'Neill's. And I just feel like that horse is really rounding into shape. He's a half to Matoli. And I feel like that he's really rounding into form. So I would go with Hot Rod Charlie first. Mandaloon, I'm going to go with second. I'm just going to blindly put a line through the Louisiana Derby and just say that, you know, it was just a bad race all around and that Brad Cox is going to figure him out and get him back on the right path. He's impeccably bred and into mischief out of an Empire Maker mare. It'd be a great story if Judmont, you know, ran well in the Derby. And I think he's still going to be 15-20-1 in this race, which would be, you know, really good odds, you know, to bet on it at that point. And then, even though I didn't pick him for our contest and even though I didn't pick him, you know, all throughout, I would be remiss if I didn't pick my own damn horse for the, you know, to hit the board in the Derby. I got to go with Helium. You know, again, he's going to be 30-40-1. But I appreciate, you know, Joe, what you're saying as far as in the sheet numbers, how it looks. I think that there's going to be a lot of inconsistency on the front end and, you know, horses, the jockeys are going to be jockeying for position and not really knowing. And it may be three or four horses wide, you know, throughout the first turn until things kind of settle in. We have, you know, a good racing style. We can sit off it. We can, you know, come from behind. Hopefully, you know, again, he'll run the race of his life and be there at the top of the stretch. But I think this is a wide open race. And I think it's a wide open race because literally anybody can win it because there are no superstars, you know, right now, in my humble opinion.
Agreed. Mandaloon would be the fourth horse. If I could pick a fourth horse, I'm definitely interested in him as well. He's worked well over the track. Don't like drawing lines through horses races with no excuse, but nevertheless, another good price that I think can factor in. Before we wrap up the Derby discussion, I just wanted to throw up the standings for our Derby Chase 3-year-old contest. I am officially eliminated because I've managed to get zero horses in the starting gate. I thought Caddo River would give me that one last chance, but not so. The rest of you guys are all doing pretty well. John has two. He's got Midnight Bourbon and Highly Motivated. Bill has three. My money's on Bill. He's got the favorite, Essential Quality. He's also got Medina Spirit and Keep Me in Mind. Al's got Mandaloon and Hot Rod Charlie. And Brian has Hidden Stash as Greatest Honor and Concert Tour. Both will not make the Derby. Those are his two big contenders. So best of luck to you guys and best of luck to John, obviously, in the Derby. We got some more racing to talk about, but we'll break it all down next week on the Writer's Room. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
They say, the harder the work, the greater the reward. And this is hard work. It's the hours put in before dawn and after dark. It's the sacrifice, the sweat, the failure, and the faith. This is our industry. This is our life's work.
Owning multiple graded stakes winning racehorses like Decorated Invader is attainable with a racing partnership like West Point Thoroughbreds. Partnerships enable you to spread your ownership across several horses for less than it costs to own one horse alone. This increases your racetrack action and your chances for a big horse. Learn more about why West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships at westpointtv.com. All right, so we'd be remiss if we didn't touch on all of the other blockbuster action that's going on this weekend. Obviously, the Kentucky Oaks is on Friday. We've got a bunch of grade ones and grade twos over the weekend at Churchill. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Oaks, and then I'll just run down some of the big names that are in the undercard stakes. You know, one thing I was struck by about the Oaks is I think it looks much more formful and chalky than the Derby. Whereas with the Derby, you can make a case for 14, 15 different horses winning the race. I don't know that you can make a case for more than like four or five horses realistically winning the Oaks. I think the favorites are all imposing. I think Travel Column, Malathot, and Search Results all have big, big shots. You know, Malathot and Search Results kind of drew outside a little bit, but I think they'll be okay. I think they have enough tactical speed to stick around and drop in heading into that clubhouse turn. The horse that I'm interested in the most, and I said this after the Ashland, is Past the Champagne. Now, she's 15-1 on the morning line. I don't think I'm going to get that big of a price. Probably be in the 8-to-10-to-1 range. She was only beaten ahead by Malathot in the Ashland. And I just think she's come a long way in a short amount of time. Some people might say that that would lead to a bounce, but I think for a lightly raced horse like this, I think she's still developing. She ran a great race in the Ashland. Malathot obviously ran terrific to run her down in that slow pace. But I think she's got more forward to go. And the main thing I see about with the Oaks is the lack of pace in the race. And that is even more exacerbated by the scratch of Ava's Grace. Now, Ava's Grace set the pace in the Fantasy, and she looked like the only real clear front runner in the race. And she's not going to make it. She didn't pass the vet, supposedly. So she's going to scratch. And I think that sets things up better for a horse like Past the Champagne, who's got speed, who's stretching out a little bit. I think that, you know, she needs to be aggressively ridden in that case. But also Search Results from the outside is probably going to be in a good pressing position. It leads me to kind of move away from horses like Clairiere, who I think are more of that one run closing type, that I just don't feel like they're going to get that kind of setup in this race. But overall, I think it's relatively chalky. I think the three favorites are all legitimate and are all going to get pretty good trips up on a moderate pace or just in behind a moderate pace. Past the Champagne is the horse I'm interested in. Other than that, no, like I said, pretty formful looking. Any thoughts on the Oaks from you guys?
Yeah, Joe, I agree with almost everything you said. I also don't think this is a stellar group. I also think this race is going to be pretty formful because the top couple contenders look to be better than everybody else. I'm not excited from a betting standpoint for this race whatsoever. I mean, the Derby is an absolutely phenomenal betting race, and this one isn't. But the one thing that I would say, and it's, you know, I'm picking the chalk here, but there's something very different about Malathot that we haven't seen before. Only one prep. If you remember, they got a little bit of a late start with her, and so she runs in the one prep and gets the job done. You would have to think she's going to improve off that race with Pletcher knowing he wants to get her into the Kentucky Oaks, saving something, and it would be in her first start of the year. So if you like Malathot off of form, I think you can fairly say that she's going to run better this time. So she's the favorite. I think she's going to run better. Boring pick, but there you go.
Yeah, and just to add to the snooze fest, you know, Joe, I agree with you as far as Past the Champagne, not only because of the race she put in and also the fact that she could go, you know, gate to wire, but also they're calling for all kinds of rain Thursday into Friday. And if the race comes up sloppy, even though Past the Champagne hasn't run in the mud yet, flatters just by genetics really, really do well in the slop. So that's only going to help her, you know, that much more, especially being that she's a front running horse, isn't going to get a lot of mud in her face. And I think that's going to embolden her and make her, you know, an even better pick. I hope you get double digits on her because she would actually be a very, very good horse to bet, especially with Ava's Grace being out and some of the other speed defections. Malathot, I mean, you know, look, how can you bet against her? You know, especially based on her form and being undefeated and coming off a 4-month layoff and running as well as she did. You know, she also, you know, comes from an AP Indy lined family. So you would think that the slop wouldn't bother her at all. And you know, the other flatter in the race that I would talk about is Search Results, Chad Brown's, you know, filly, who also is undefeated and could make a case, you know, for running in the slop. So not an exciting race from a betting standpoint, but I think that it's going to be an exciting race because on form, there's a couple of horses that we've talked about that are kind of above the rest of the field, and they should pretty much hit the board in my estimation.
Yeah, we could have a decent stretch battle between the favorites in there, but you know, it's like not a race that I'm looking to get too clever in, other than Past the Champagne. Just to run down some of the other stuff, I'm gonna start with Friday's races and then move on to Saturday. Friday we also have the Grade One La Troyenne. Not a stellar field. She dares the devils in there. She's kind of the most interesting horse. Max Fields and Ali Sheba You got a big field in the eight bells. No real superstars in there, but we got a 12 horse field. Day Out of the Office is returning in that race, so that's the interesting name, I think, in the eight bells. She's been working lights out. She was unable to make the Oaks. Got a little bit of a late start this year, but interesting that they're cutting her back to 7 furlongs for that race. So I'll keep my eye on her in the turf sprint on Friday at Churchill. Faya, who is a really, really interesting horse, is going to run in there. Probably some other speed that might put a wrench in his plans, but he's definitely the horse, I think, with the most upside in that race. To me, the most interesting horse that's running on Friday, the most interesting race on Friday, is Anne Pearl in the Edgewood. Now, she had those three monster races as a two-year-old. She was undefeated. She had a huge race in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf. She hasn't been seen yet as a three-year-old. She seems to be loose on the lead in that race. They're going a mile and a 16, so I'm not going to bet against her at a short price. But I will give a big pop to Gift List, who I think, you know, if someone does put pressure on Anne Pearl, she is a very, very nice filly. She's a daughter of Bated Breath for the Ammermans and Brian Lynch. She ran second in the Appalachian at Keeneland and closed into a really, really slow pace. We talked about it after the race, how I liked all the top three horses in that race. Jouster got away with this easy pace, and Giftless made up a lot of ground, had to be coming home in 22 and some, a little bit of change. So while I respect Aunt Pearl, it is her first start off the layoff. If she comes up a little wanting late in deep stretch, I think Giftless is a very serious three-year-old turf filly. Moving on to Saturday, obviously the Derby is the main event, but the Turf Classic has some interesting horses in it. It's a 9-horse field. We've got Colonel Liam, who I think, you know, is kind of the consensus number one older male turf horse right now. But there's some roadblocks in his way to try to get this grade one win. Ivar, who won the Shadwell Turf Mile last year in a big performance, is in that race. Digital Age, Smooth Like Straight, Domestic Spending, who we last saw winning the Hollywood Derby for Chad Brown. Ride a Comet for Mark Cassie, who was second in the Maker's Mark Mile last time. So 9-horse field, pretty interesting. The biggest star to run on Saturday, outside of maybe the Derby winner, if there's an explosive Derby winner, is Gamine. Gamine's going to run in the Derby City Distaff. She looks like the lock of all locks. She's going to be 1-5, 1-9, but there's no other speed in the race. There's no real big contender that you would be wary of. Bell's the One is in there. She's a grade one winner, but she's kind of a horse that needs a little bit of a setup, and Gamine's just supposed to go out to the front and gallop in that race, and we're all looking forward to seeing her run. In the Churchill Down Stakes, you know, owing to the topsy-turviness of the male sprint division, we got 13 horses in the Churchill Down Stakes, which is a grade one now. Nobody that really jumps off the page at you, but Tap It to Win is a horse that I brought up when he had his four-year-old debut earlier this year at Tampa. He's the horse I would be most interested in just taking a first glance at that race. But another big field, we've got the Churchill Distaff Turf Mile, 7 horses, including Got Stormy. And then the Pat Day Mile is some horses are turning back from the Derby Trail to run in that race. Look, Jackie's Warrior is in there. Prevalence is also in there. Dream Shake is in there. So those are obviously three horses you've had Derby expectations and dreams at some point, but are going to cut back to that 1 mile race. And then the American Turf is another race with a big field, 14 horses in there, no real superstars, but definitely some big fields, some competitive fields, and some big names running throughout the weekend. So I think it's a nice little mix of undercard races where you got some big favorites who everybody's looking to see from a fan standpoint, and then you got some races without those big names that are going to be 13, 14 horse, really good, wide open betting affair. So it's going to be a terrific weekend of racing. We're going to break it all down next week. We're obviously looking forward most to the Derby, but there's just so much to be excited about. And it's, like I said, it's going to be great to have fans back in the stands at Churchill. NBC does a great job broadcasting it. Like I said, we spoke to Randy Moss. He and Mike Tirico and Jerry Bailey do a great job. So tune in Friday and Saturday. I'll be watching. It's going to be a great, great weekend of racing. Joining a West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. Learn more at westpointtb.com. We'll be right back after this message from West Point Thoroughbreds.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
This week's TDN Story of the Week is brought to you by the Minnesota Racehorse Engagement Project. Find out how you can get involved in racehorse ownership at Canterbury Park this summer with several options and investments ranging from $250 to $10,000. Visit racehorseminnesota.com to learn more. All right, so we just wanted to mention a horse real quick who is kind of blowing up off of one race and is hopefully going to be heard from a lot the rest of the year, and that's Flightline. Flightline debuted at San Anita on Saturday, was bet universally like a good thing, went off at 4-5, I believe, and just was incredible. Won by 13 and a half lengths, geared down. This is a $1 million horse. Was co-owned by Costa Hronas and Hronas Racing, who Bill talked to the other day for a story. He got a 105 buyer, which, you know, if you put him in the Derby tomorrow on Saturday, he'd be favorite. Like, I'm pretty sure he would go off as the favorite. Maybe send second choice to Essential Quality, but he'd be right there. And that you know, it speaks to the kind of murkiness of the Derby field and how there aren't really any of these breakout contenders. But it also speaks to how impressive Flightline was. And he did it all on his own too, which was just incredible to watch. John Sadler trainee. They seemed to be a little bit non-committal and did not want to commit to running him in any of the Triple Crown races. Sounds like from the story that Bill did, they're going to point more to the summer and fall, which is a little bit disappointing. I would like to see him take a crack at the Preakness and the Belmont, especially if the fields are coming up short and a little subpar. But nevertheless, whenever we get to see him, if he sticks around, he is potentially a very, very special horse. You just don't win like that with a 105 buyer very often. Like, the last debut performance that I can remember that was like that, you know, all things considered, with all the hype and the win, was Justify. Like, Justify was the last horse I remember who everybody knew was supposedly really, really good, and then just came out and proved it without a shadow of a doubt in his first race. Obviously, he went on to do big things and win the Triple Crown. We don't know what the future holds for Flightline yet, but wow. Just that's all I got to say is wow. And Bill did his story, so I'll toss it to him.
Well, I mean, I'll take it one step further, Joe. And, you know, I don't want to be guilty of hyping something, hyperbole, overstating it. But I'm going to say this. This is the most impressive debut win from a horse I've ever seen. And, you know, that includes thousands and thousands of horses. For the reasons that you said, not only does he demolish the field, but he's literally, you know, in a canter crossing the wire where he's pulled up the 16th pole. The figure, the 105, is just tremendous. Like you said, you know, he is faster than any of the horses. You know, you can't take a 6-furlong maiden number compared to a mile and a quarter. But if you want to, he is faster in quite a bit than anybody in the race. The disappointment is that they didn't get him around in time. Now, if he would debut like January or something, think of all the hype and the craziness. They would have made this horse 3-5 in the Derby future wager if they made life as good 2-1. But you know, John Sadler is a very good trainer. He's not going to do something that just for the sake of making the Derby. They took their time with this horse, and they have not said one word about where he will run next. I would imagine whatever allowance races in the book at Santa Anita coming up next, where Nonwares and two other than, will be the spot where he's going to show up. But yeah, I mean, this is, I mean, somebody told me, you got to go watch this. And I was like, yeah, what's the big deal? Then I watched this and, oh my God. I mean, it was just phenomenal. Another horse that might be put in that category of debut first timers that were really, really good. Uncle Mo is another one. But Justify, that's a good one to come up with. But I can't, like I said, it's the most impressive race I've ever seen from a first-time starter.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to run against him anytime in the near future based on that race. But it was super impressive. We got to pump the brakes a little bit, though. It was only 6 furlongs, and it was on a speed favoring racetrack in Santa Anita. When most of the top horses in Santa Anita are headed, you know, east now for these big races. But very impressive. 108 and change. First time out, you know, a son of Tappet, a $1 million horse at public auction. I mean, checks all the boxes for looks, pedigree, and obviously the eye test, the way he ran, and also the buyer numbers and all the other metrics that go out there. Very, very impressive, albeit 6 furlongs. But next time out will be, you know, another test for him to see if he can possibly go at least a mile or maybe two turns. And then we'll see, you know, where he stands up against, you know, some of these other seasoned horses. But very impressive race. Really, I mean, any of us would want to own a horse like that. No question. And actually, Joe almost bid on a horse like that the other day.
We'll get to that. I should be so lucky. But yeah, I mean, you know, you don't want to extrapolate too much from just that one sprint debut. But man, if he can stay together and stretch out, I think he's got a chance to be something really special, especially if he's going to be beaten up on horses who have been through the rigors of the Triple Crown series. I mean, they're going to be ripe for the pickings for a horse who's that good. I got another one for you, Bill. How about McLean's Music? McLean's Music had that one debut race where he ran a 114 buyer. That's the only other one I can think of other than Justify that was, you know, at that level. One other horse I wanted to mention just before we move on from this past week, and it's actually yesterday. It was on a Tuesday at Parts, and I think I may have found the challenger to Gamine in the Philly and Mare Sprint Division, and it's a Pennsylvania bred by Hey Chubb. Shout out to Hey Chubb, who's still doing it out here. He's producing state bred stakes horses. Usually they're New Jersey breds. This one's a Pennsylvania bred, but they ran the state bred Unique Bella Stakes at Parks yesterday. Now, Chubb Wagon had gone 4-for-4 going into that race. She had won all of her races by open lengths. She got a 99 buyer, 2 back at Aqueduct, and had her first stakes race yesterday. It's her first time going 7 furlongs, and she shook off some real intense early pace pressure and just blew them away in the stretch and finished full of run, perfect on her lead changes, won by 7.5 lengths. I don't have a buyer figure for it yet, but I'm guessing it's going to be triple digits or at least very close. And I think, you know, it's going to be David versus Goliath, but I think the horses trained by Guadalupe Preciado, won by Daniel Lopez and George Chestnut, I think we might have a real matchup for Gamine later in the year. Obviously, it's a big step up from Unique Bella. From the Unique Bella, the Pennsylvania bred Unique Bella, especially when Gamine's going to win by 20 this weekend. But I'm telling you, man, I found something in this Parks horse. John shaking his head as the number one fan club, as the number one fan of Gamine. But
yeah,
I'm digging. I'm out here watching Parks on a Tuesday to find you the latest contenders for this coveted crown of Gamine's. We'll see.
Don't make any t-shirts yet for Chubb Wagon. I'll just say that, right?
We'll be right back after this message from the Minnesota Racehorse Engagement Project.
It's said that life is simply a series of memories we share with the ones we love. The experiences, the joys, the thrills. Imagine a life that includes meeting your very own racehorse for the first time. The thrill of watching your racehorse passing others one by one down this stretch, and then sharing the winner's circle celebration with those closest to you. Let the Minnesota Racehorse Engagement Project help guide you to the experiences and memories you deserve. Owning a racehorse is less expensive and more attainable than you think. Visit racehorseminnesota.com. That's racehorseminnesota.com, and begin making your memories this summer at Canterbury Park.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. So our Green Group Guest of the Week this week, with the best background of any guest we've had yet, is the excellent analyst on the NBC Sports Horse Racing broadcast, Randy Moss. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, I'm honored to be joining you. I think I've watched every single one of these ones that you guys have done over the years. So it's a pleasure. And this background is out of necessity. Jerry Bailey and I just had to wait for Todd Fletcher, and we spent a while with him. So this was the best place to do it from. I'm glad it works.
Can you clock some horses at the same time while you're talking to us? We'll get you multitasking.
It might be tough using the timer function on my iPhone and doing a Zoom at the same time, but I'll try.
All right, well, we appreciate you making time. Let's just start with this. We've had the Derby PPs for a little under 24 hours. What are your early thoughts on the Derby field? Do you respect the favorites? Are you going to try to get cute with some long shots? How do you feel?
Yeah, I respect the favorite. I mean, because of his versatility and because, you know, regardless of circumstances, fast pace, slow pace, inside, outside, sloppy track, fast track, he almost always, you know, brings his A game. The vulnerability there, I think, is that his A game is only like about average and maybe even a little below average historically for a Kentucky Derby favorite. So looking at the field, I mean, all we've got to go on, obviously, is what we've seen in the past, which is limited. But if any of these horses jumps up and surprises us by running an above average Kentucky Derby, they'll probably win, and the central quality will probably get beat.
Hey, Randy, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Once Life is Good came out of the Kentucky Derby field from a buyer speed figure standpoint, and if people don't know, Randy's a big part of the buyer team as well, are pretty ordinary, I would say. I mean, a lot of horses in the 90s, et cetera. I don't know how that compares to other derbies, but it's popular for people to knock the crop. But is it appropriate this time? Is this a less than stellar Derby group?
Well, obviously, all we have to go on right now, Bill, is what you just mentioned. I mean, you look at the speed figures, various different speed figures, not just the buyers that I'm involved with, but, you know, Jerry Brown's and Ragazin's and all that. And almost all of them have this crop, I think, a little below average coming in to the Kentucky Derby. But this is the most inexperienced Kentucky Derby field probably in the history of the race. I know going all the way back to 1906, which is as far back as the stats go, this Derby field has the lowest number of starts per horse ever, 5.3. So there's a lot of improvement that's baked into these horses probably because they're so lightly raced. The problem is we just don't know the upside. We don't know what these horses are capable of running, and neither do their owners and their trainers and their riders. They're all guessing just like we are, you know, what the top end is on all these horses. Right now, it looks like a below average bunch, but obviously it wouldn't be shocking to see a couple of them really take that big step on Saturday.
And Randy, we've been following this three-year-old crop, you know, since the beginning of the year, watching all their races. And I think across the board, Joe, Bill, and I have thought that the biggest and best group of horses, you know, come from Louisiana, and also we're coming from Arkansas, which is, you know, right in your neck of the woods. And you have a great background and history with Oaklawn. And then when the Derby entries came out, you know, really there was nobody other than Superstock, there was nobody coming in from Arkansas. They're all headed for the Preakness. What's your feel on the group that was coming into the Triple Crown races, you know, whether it's Superstock or Caddo River or Concert Tour or somebody else that we missed? Is there kind of a dark horse that may jump up, you know, later on in the three-year-old campaigns?
From Arkansas, I don't know. I mean, Concert Tour was really disappointing, obviously, in the Arkansas Derby. I think that what got him really, I think it was distance limitation, in my opinion. I think the difference between a soft-paced Rebel in which he controlled the pace and an aggressively paced Arkansas Derby where he had to deal with Caddo River right from the start was kind of his undoing, and he had no punch for the final quarter mile. And Bob Baffert also said that he doesn't believe that the horse traveled that well. So that's why he chose to bring him back to Churchill Downs instead of flying him back to California to get ready for the Preakness, to avoid, you know, a little less travel from that standpoint. Caddo River probably is not going to make the Preakness. That's you know, I think that's kind of a long shot right now. So the horses from Arkansas, I don't think we're going to see too much of those horses down the road. Louisiana horses, I concurred with you that from a numbers perspective, they looked really solid most of the spring. Mandaloon obviously laid an egg in the Louisiana Derby for reasons that nobody knows. We even talked to Florent Giroux back here on the backstretch about a half hour ago. And I said, look, off the record, totally off the record, do you have any theory as to why Mandaloon ran like he did? And he said, zero. He said, I have absolutely no idea. But I don't really have a strong opinion about who the late developing horses that we might see coming down the line. I think maybe some of them are horses that have never even run into stakes race yet.
I hope Florent doesn't watch the show because this is all on the record, Randy, just so you know. So I wanted to ask about the broadcast that you guys do. You guys do an incredible job on the NBC broadcast. And I think you and Richard do a really good job. not dumbing down racing for the general audience, but also, you know, not making it too complicated. So what are some of your strategies and the way you approach the broadcast so that you kind of straddle that middle ground where you're not insulting the hardcore horse players, but you're also not making it too confusing for the casual viewers?
That's a hard line to straddle. And it's very nice of you to say what you did, because that's one of my primary focuses, is trying to figure out how to explain things in a way that the average person can say, oh, that makes sense, but you're not insulting the people that really are involved in this sport right from the beginning. And there are all kinds of different approaches to that that the networks take. When I was back with ESPN, one year we went to a big meeting in Bristol, Connecticut with all the big wigs at ESPN. And they said, all right, look, you got to make sure and not use too much inside jargon. You got to make sure these people understand exactly what you're talking about. The next year we went back for another big wig meeting and they said, look, use all the inside jargon you can use. All of our marketing tells us that it makes people feel like that they're inside the sport, that they're learning something that they didn't know when you use inside jargon. And then a couple of years later, it was back to, no, dumb it down a little bit. Yeah, but yeah. I do feel that it's better to try to find a middle ground there. Yeah.
Randy, the pace of the Kentucky Derby, again, when there was a horse that looked like he was definitely going to set the pace, Caddo River, now is out. Looks to me about you got five or six horses that want to be third or second in the first call. But I don't see anyone who you can say pinpoint that horse is going to the lead. Who do you think will go to the lead, and do you think it'll be a slow pace?
Jerry and I both think Rock Your World is going to the lead, especially now with Caddo River out. To me, from a pace figure perspective, those two horses stood out when you were handicapping the Derby 2 weeks ago, a week ago. And now without Caddo River, you know, if he just runs his race back in the Santa Anita Derby, I think that puts Rock Your World on the lead. I'll invoke Jerry again. I mean, he and I are like 1 and 1A discussing all these things. He believes that the key to Rock Your World is for Joel Rosario to ride him on Saturday, exactly the same way that John Velasquez rode Authentic in the Kentucky Derby. From an outside post, gradually, slowly meet out his early speed in the run down the stretch the first time. Don't move your hands at all. Keep him nice and relaxed. And then right before you get to the first turn, open your hands up a little bit, give the horses cue, let him spurt to the early lead and clear the field and drop over. I think Medina Spirit is probably going to be the horse. And we haven't had a chance to talk to Baffert yet about this, but I think Medina Spirit is going to be the one most likely to be closest to Rock Your World to force the pace. And then, as you said, a lot of other horses back there wanting to be in that position. You know, sit Hot Rod Charlie, Midnight Bourbon, even Mandaloon sitting third, fourth, right behind the speed. But I don't think it's going to be an exceptionally fast pace. I think it'll be an honest pace, but not exceptionally fast.
And Randy, yesterday was actually the post draw. And I know as an owner, you know, I was sitting there nervously waiting for our pill to be pulled to see where we were going to be. When you look at this field of 20, do you think so-and-so got a better draw and that's going to help its case, or so-and-so got a terrible draw and that's really going to be a problem for that horse?
John, you probably never heard me say this because ESPN and NBC wouldn't let me say it when we televised the draw live. In my opinion, the post position draw is the single most overrated part of Kentucky Derby week. I really do. For example, you see all the hand wringing all week about owners that don't want the number one post position, as if there's a pit of quicksand right in front of stall number one when they leave the gate. But yet, if you look at the odds rankings each year for the horses that draw the number one post, on average, they outrun their odds. It's like people think that, you know, geometry suddenly goes out the window when it comes to Kentucky Derby time. Hell, it's why Calvin Burrell won three Kentucky Derbies, because he's the inside post. And yet you hear people say, okay, the inside post, the rail, hasn't won since Ferdinand in 1986. Okay. Known agenda, buried down on the rail. Oh my God, what a bad post. Essential Quality got the 14 hole. Fabulous draw. It's a perfect draw for Essential Quality. Hey, no horse has won from post 14 since Carry Back in 1961. How come nobody's talking about that? What looks like might be a perfect post can be a terrible post if the horses around you decide to make it a terrible post, and vice versa. It's just kind of the luck of the draw, and I don't think you can really tell until the gate's open.
I was love getting all the quotes from the trainers, too, because other than like one or two, it's all going to be some form of, it's fine. So you got like 20 quotes of trainers going, it's fine. But so one more question for me, one of the things that I respect about you is your figure making prowess. You had the Moss Pace figures that I thought really kind of changed the way that people looked at the racing form. Since then, Timeform US has gotten on that bandwagon as well. What do you think the state of data is in racing in terms of innovation, in terms of accessibility? What kind of strides do you think we've made, and what still needs to be done?
Yeah, hopefully we're beginning what I think could be a really important era technology-wise for horse players. If we can get the things like the GMAX GPS technology, tracking technology that Equibase is trying to perfect right now, it's obviously had its problems. If Trackus can take the next step forward, for example, if we can get to the point where we can very accurately say, and the technology is there to do this, you know, horse A traveled X number of feet during the running of this race, that can make a world of difference in all the various different, you know, speed figure and pace figure computations. And that's like the first step, I think, to really getting to that next level. But I think it's on its way. I really do.
So, Randy, after you said post positions don't matter, I'm going to ask you a post position question. the one thing that probably did matter most over the years, of course, is the one post. And I know some people thought, oh, my goodness, known agenda, quality horse, drew the one. What do you hear or what have you surmised on your own about how much better the post would be now that they have the new gate versus the old gate?
Bill, all the trainers are talking about it, especially Todd Fletcher, who's got the number one post with known agenda. He's actually had a talk with the starter here at Churchill Downs, who's told him that there's a 15-foot difference between the old two starting gate system and the one starting gate system, meaning that in the old days when horses broke from post number one with two gates side by side in the Derby, they were looking straight down the racetrack at the rail, that like the rail was directly in front of them and they had to navigate to the right to try to get around the rail as it turned from the home stretch into the main stretch. Now with the new starting gate, and they're even going to move it out a little further than 15 feet, it's a complete straight shot looking down the stretch, and jockeys no longer have to worry about that. You know, horseman, starter, think it's going to make a huge difference. You know, I didn't have a problem with the number one post position to begin with. Like I said, it's why Calvin Burrell's in the Hall of Fame. So riding the rail. But yeah, I think the starting gate is a big step. Mm-hmm.
And Randy, one more question, but it has nothing to do with horse racing. It has to do with your other love, which is NFL football. Aside from the fact we have some big races coming up this weekend at Churchill, there's also a little thing known as the NFL draft coming up this week. I know I'm not going to ask you to pick between your children as far as which you like better, but as far as the NFL draft goes, is there a player that you've been watching over the past couple of years where you say that he's going to be a bona fide star?
Yeah, Kyle Pitts, the tight end from Florida, is just an amazing talent, almost a transformational talent at the tight end position. He's not much of a blocker, but when it comes to all the other skill sets that he has, he's going to be a phenomenal addition to any team that drafts him, and probably an instantaneous Pro Bowler in his rookie year. We're all quarterback-centric looking at the NFL draft, obviously, nowadays. I think, and so does Mike Tirico, he just said the same thing to me, that Kyle Pitts is probably going to be the number one non-quarterback selected in the draft. And when you're talking about ranking my loves between horse racing and NFL, horse racing obviously is a clear number one. I'm not much of a draft guy to begin with. I love NFL, not particularly draft week. So I'm glad I'm here.
Well, it's close as we're going to get to football for a while. So I'll be watching. But Randy, thank you so much for the time. Are you on a selfie stick right now?
No, my arm is getting tired.
That's what I'm saying. Steady. I thought you had a selfie stick, and even then I was going to compliment you. But Randy, thank you so much for the time. Enjoy Derby week and continue the great work on the broadcast.
Yeah, you guys keep up the good work too. Take care.
Thanks, Randy.
Excellent.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. As this week's Green Group Guest of the Week, Randy Moss, will receive a free one-hour tax consultation. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from The Green Group.
The Green Group is widely recognized as the top-rated tax and accounting firm specializing in the horse business. Why do the top owners, breeders, pinhookers, and trainers trust the Green Group as their tax advisors? The difference is experience. Firm founder Len Green has over four decades of experience owning, breeding, and racing horses. First-hand knowledge gives Green Group clients proven tax and money-saving strategies. Visit the Green Group at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
So before we get out of here this week, I wanted to reflect a little bit on last week's show. Went down to Ocala, did the live show from the OBS Sales Grounds. It's gotten a lot of great feedback. We appreciate everybody who's watching and writing in and supporting us, because it took a lot of work. You know, I had to fly on a private plane down there, and they only had like chips and pretzels. They didn't have like the gourmet meal I was expecting. So it was a little disappointing, but just kidding. John and Len treated me very well down there. I had a great time learning about the sales game. So that was my first sale. So I had a couple of reactions. First of all, the main thing, and I wrote about this in the story about the podcast last week, is the main thing that I took away was just how happy everybody was to have things be back to normal, and to have, you know, a full parking lot where everybody's feeling optimistic and hopeful about the future. Horses were selling well, consigners were doing well. It was just, you know, as someone who hadn't been there last year, I could only imagine what it was like last year compared to this year. And it was a real fun, joyous atmosphere. And I really, you know, could appreciate that. And, you know, I thought the interviews that we did were great. I thought all four guys were really good and had a lot of insights. I think consigners in general are pretty down to earth guys who have a good sense of humor, because it's the kind of business where things can go south or go great in a hurry. So you kind of have to have a little bit of good humor. I thank them on the show, but I want to thank Patty and the crew for coming down there as well. They did a great job. And the show looked great. You know, it just from an aesthetic standpoint, looked amazing. The picture was crystal clear, and I loved having in the background the horses and the people around. So we're really proud of that. And we're glad that people really enjoyed that as well. And hopefully, like I said, it's a little bit of a test run for some future live shows, and maybe we can get Bill out there next time for whenever we do that. But there was one story I wanted to tell before I finished reflecting on this. So remember what I said last week at the beginning, where I said, I'm Joe Bianca, blah, blah, blah. One thing I've learned this week is not to accidentally raise your hand or scratch your head or anything and bid on a horse. No less than 30 minutes later, I did that. Right after saying that, I did that. So I was in the sales. I was at the sale with John, Len, and Mark Cassie, and a horse came into the ring, Medaglia Doro out of Tin Type Gal. And Mark Cassie turns to me and says, "This horse is going to go for a lot." And as she starts, as the numbers start to go up, I turn to Mark and I'm like a rocket. Like, she's going up like a rocket. And the guy takes my bid, and I didn't realize it until he came back to me. He came back to me at I bid $600,000, and he came back to me at like 625 and was like, and I was like, no, please, no. So that was pretty ironic. And I, you know, if I had won the horse, I would have just put it on the TDN card. So I don't think it would have been that big of a deal. But thankfully I got outbid, and the horse was actually an RNA. The horse went up to 725,000, was an RNA. So either way, I think I was in the clear there, but it was just funny that I broke my own rule 20 minutes later, and not on a horse that cost $10,000, on a $600,000 horse. So Mark and John and Len got a kick out of that. They literally told every single person we ran into the rest of the way, like, watch out for this guy. He's been $600,000 on horses. But apparently I didn't learn my own lesson, John.
No, and the funniest part of the story, actually twofold. One was that you know, they ran you up. I mean, they saw Joe Bianca bidding on horses, and they were like, "Hey, we got a live one. Let's keep bidding." And that's why the horse was an RNA for 725, which was pretty funny. The second thing is, I can only imagine if the hammer went down at 600,000. Not only would you have sprinted out of there, you would have beaten Chubb Wagon and or Gamine for 6 furlongs. We never would have seen you again. It would have been like a puff of smoke and a shadow of where Joe Bianca was, and maybe a puddle on the seat of where Joe Bianca was.
Definitely. I was telling Megan about it, and I was like, I accidentally bid 600,000 on a horse, and she goes, "What the hell? Like, there must be a take back option." I was like, "The take back option is me disappearing into a vapor cloud." That was the only other option for me at that point if the hammer had dropped. So thankfully it didn't. But now I have a horse to root for. Medaglia d'Oro out of Tintype Gal. It's a colt. So, you know, maybe we can get a matchup between him and Ryder's Room somewhere down the line, and then I'll really have my allegiances torn. But yeah, it was a great time at OBS. It was a lot of hospitality from everybody we ran into, and everybody was in a good mood. So thankfully I didn't come home with a $600,000 horse, and everything else was good enough and successful enough that I think we're going to do some more live shows in the future. So.
With Bill, because Bill, you were missed. We missed you on that.
Did you guys really miss me?
No, but for the show, we'll say we did. No, we did. Listen, it had a different energy because as much as we love doing the show on the Zoom, format and everything like that, yeah. it definitely was different. You know, being there, being live, being able to interview people, and you know, I'm a writer wannabe. So the opportunity for me to like ask questions to people, like you guys do for a living, was really fun for me. But we had an extra chair there that sat empty. With an empty moniker as well, because you don't have a title yet. But we definitely missed you, and we look forward to having you at the next live show. Hopefully at Saratoga.
And if not,
we'll hang a Red Sox shirt on the empty chair, and it'll be like Bill's. Patty Wolf and their crew did a great job with the banner, with the chairs. Absolutely. That was a real set, baby. That was a real Radio Row type set. So all right, so one last thing before we get out of here this week. We're going to do a little giveaway. We're going to do the first ever TDN Writers Room giveaway. John somehow did not find enough people to take all of his Helium shirts. He bought like several hundred of them, I think. I have several. Bill's got several. So we're going to do a little contest. And they're nice shirts. Like, it's a really great logo. It was designed by John's wife, Michelle. She did a great job. And you can't see the back, but there, John, show them the back. Yeah, so it's like that kind of molecular diagram. Very cool in the colors of DJ Stable. So we're going to give away five of these exclusive Helium t-shirts. If you can give Bill Finley a proper title. Every week on this show, he comes on and he still doesn't have a title, and he laments that fact, and we have to keep filling things in at the bottom. And it's getting exhausting. Honestly, our editing crew is complaining about having to keep coming up with titles for him. So email us. You can email me at joebianca@gmail.com. You can email Sue Finley at thetdn.com. Give us your best title for Bill Finley to wear on this show, and we will send you a Helium shirt. Best of luck. All right, so that's going to do it for this week's edition of the TDN Writers Room, presented by Keeneland. A reminder that entries are open for the Keeneland May digital sale until May 18th. Go to KeenelandDigital.com for details. I want to thank Bill Finley, John Green, our Green Group guest of the week, Randy Moss, our producer, Patty Wolf, and our editors, Danny Siper, Aaliyah LaRocca, and Anthony LaRocca. Thank you so much for watching. Enjoy the Derby and send in those ideas for Bill's title. He might send you a shirt. See you next week.